You're listening to Proven Perspectives, a podcast with John Hawkins, the founder of Leadership Edge Incorporated. I'm Laura, John's daughter, and in each episode, we will explore a topic related to life, leadership, or mentoring. Through nearly 50 years of faith in Christ, John has learned proven life and leadership perspectives that will equip listeners for a lifestyle of leadership in their marriages, families, careers, communities, and churches. Hey, Dad.
Laura, it is great to hear your voice. How are things in Orange County, California today?
They are fantastic. It's a little overcast, but I probably shouldn't complain about Southern California weather. So.
That's right.
Anyway, how are you?
Doing great. It's been a good full day here in North Carolina and just a beautiful spring day. So very grateful for the environs that I get to be in today.
Awesome. Well, and I'm really excited about the podcast for today. And we even have a great title for it. I love this title, Pride, the Poisonous Drink. So we'll be linking this paper in the show notes. But maybe you could kind of set the stage. What are we talking about today? What does that mean, Pride, the Poisonous Drink?
Well, I think as leaders, whether we're leading, you know, in a big business, whether we're leading in our community, in our church, family, wherever we're leading, we always have to understand the context in which we lead. And a lot of times when we're thinking about context, we think about, you know, what are the things going on around us, what are the cultural norms going on around us, what are the challenges of our company or our family at this time, all those kinds of things, what are our resources. But one of the contexts that we tend to skip over is, in a sense, ourself as a context, meaning with me as a man or woman who is trying to exert Christian influence in this place, what are the contextual things about me that I need to understand that will affect my leadership, whether I realize it or not? And we can think about that from all different levels and angles and perspectives, but I think that one of the core ones is to understand the orientation that we all have towards pridefulness, towards pride. You know, some theologians say that pride is, in a sense, the root sin. Mm-hmm. Like when you look at any sin, any rebellion in our lives, somehow at the core of it, there is pride. And so what we also don't realize as leaders is, you know, part of the context is me and part of my context is pride, but we don't realize how we have kind of come to love that. Meaning we like how it makes us feel when we put ourselves forward at others' expense sometimes. We like how it makes us feel when we're so caught up with how wise we are or how useful we've been. And in that way, pride becomes kind of this really sick and twisted, like poisonous drink, where we find it just delightful and tasty and eventually kind of irresistible.
Yeah.
But what we don't realize is it's killing us. It's killing us spiritually. It's killing us in terms of our the depth of our relationship with the Lord. And it's really killing us in terms of the effect that it has on those around us, especially those that we love the most. Yeah. So that's what Pride, the Poisonous Drink, is all about.
Man, that's so good. And so with this, and you reference a few verses in the paper, but what are some Bible passages that have kind of helped you to get a clear understanding about pride and how it affects us?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. As you go on through life, you realize that you know, the first three or four chapters of Genesis explain so much about everything. And I think in Genesis 3, when we see the horrible story of how God has said to the man and woman that they can eat of any tree, except for the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And then Satan comes along to entice Eve and then Adam to eat of that tree.
Hmm.
And we see really, in, I think in a real sense, the first instance of pride gone bad, meaning pride that goes up against God and says, God, I know what you have said. I know what you desire. I know what you've promised, but I know better than you. And so what I want is this. And though we don't really realize it, it blinds us so much that we're going up against, you know, the Lord God Almighty of the universe, who is our Father. And we're saying, yeah, I get all that, God, but I want this, and I'm going to get it my way. So I think just pondering and kind of reflecting on Genesis 3 in terms of what all was going on in that story, and really reading myself into that story. How am I Eve in this story? How am I Adam in this story?
Yeah.
And what things around me are like the snake in the story. So that certainly has been one passage that just kind of in a very organic at the root, right at the center of what pride means. Genesis 3, I think, opens it up for us. But then the other one that has been kind of a go-to passage for me through the years is 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 5 through 7. And it says in the ESV translation, it says, likewise, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. Clothe yourselves, all of you, whether you're old or young, with humility towards one another. And then there's this promise from the Word. It says, for God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. And as I read that earlier in my life, I began to think about that passage in this way. I began to think about, you know, me, you know, John Hawkins, lining up, say, against the New England Patriots football team, their defense.
Yeah.
And what would it look like for me to line up against their defense? And what that would look like is, it's not a matter of will I be opposed. It's not a matter of will I be completely and thoroughly and absolutely and wholly opposed. It's just a matter of time.
Man, yeah.
And so when God says, you know, son or daughter, if you do this, I'm telling you up front that I will oppose you. That is an ominous and an awesome moment.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not a matter of will I be opposed. It's not a matter of will I be completely, thoroughly, wholly opposed. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
But the rest of that passage, which maybe we'll talk a little bit later on in this podcast and in the next one, is that, but God gives grace to the humble. And then it says, humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time he may exalt you, casting all your anxieties on him because he cares for you. You know, there's an author named Thomas Terence, who in the past and maybe currently still is at the C.S. Lewis Institute. And one of the ways that he defined pride was this. He said, the desire to lift up and exalt ourselves beyond our place as God's creature lies at the heart of pride. I'll say that again. The desire to lift up and exalt ourselves beyond our place as God's creature lies at the heart of pride.
Yeah.
And I think that's really, I think that's true both like conceptually and intellectually. And for me personally, I know that's true experientially. That is a description of me when I'm drinking the poisonous drink of pride.
Yeah. Man, Dad, all of this is so good and so relatable for me. And I love that you brought up 1 Peter 5:5-7, because you know this, our listeners don't yet know this, but I asked if we could do a podcast about pride or humility, because this is something that I've been realizing. I mean, basically, yeah, I got to a place where I was struggling a lot with feeling really anxious, and I would have never said I was a proud person because it was basically just all of this self-condemnation stuff. But really, and I think you could see this way before I could, but really, self-condemnation is just another form of self-obsession. And so these verses, I mean, and it even talks about anxiety in 1 Peter 5:5-7, but mm-hmm. They've become my go-to verses when I'm wrestling with my circumstances or my position, because verse 6 says that we are, like, always in God's hands. And so he's the one who is, like, raising and lowering, and he's choosing our position. And so this kind of reminded me of, like, a quote from John Bailey that I know you've read before, but it says, it's a prayer. He says, "Oh, Lord, forgive me for my unwillingness to believe that you have called me to a small work and my brother or sister to a great one." And I can just so relate to that. Like, the unwillingness to believe that my job is to work in an unseen way while someone else, you know, has a more, like, shining role. So I guess with what you're saying about pride is such an innate thing in all of us, and that when we are proud, we are seeking to move out of the place that God has for us, and we're pushing him to the periphery. Like, how should we view God and ourselves in those kinds of circumstances, maybe where we feel like overlooked or underutilized? What's the right way to look at that?
Yeah. Boy, and haven't we all, we've either all felt that, you know, overlooked or underutilized, or some of us have lived out our entire lives trying to control everything so that we won't be overlooked and we won't be underutilized. But I think that, you know, what's brought me back to sanity and to a God-centered view of this is realizing that he is absolutely at work all the time accomplishing his purposes in all of creation, but also in my own life. And that in those times where I feel like I'm being overlooked or underutilized, what I have to come to understand that as being is I'm not trusting God that he is guiding my life and that he's weaving together the circumstances in my life in a way that that is right.
That's good.
I think we so much tie our value around our productivity, around our position, our status. And so part of the one of the things that haunts us about being underutilized or overlooked is, well, what's that going to say about me? You know, am I worth anything? And I think we just have to keep coming back to God and saying, you know, my life is to be free spending money in your hands, God. And you are to spend that any way you want, any time you want, anywhere you want, on whomever you want, and with whatever result or not result you want. And it's your responsibility, God, to spend my life. It's my responsibility to be in your hands, grateful to be spent however you deem that. And I think for Christians, one of the things that really trips us up sometimes, and especially in this kind of period of Christianity, at least in the U.S., is we have this idea about stewarding our life and stewarding our gifts. And I think there's definitely a biblical warrant to this, a biblical basis of the sense that, you know, I need to use that which God has given me in ways that, in a sense, kind of maximize the gifts he's given me. But I think there can be a subtle pridefulness that creeps into our ideas of stewarding our lives or stewarding our gifts that just freaks out when God says, no, this is a moment of anonymity for you. This is a moment of hiddenness for you. This is a moment when I'm crafting something in you that you could never imagine. And so we get all bent out of shape about, well, but my gifts aren't being stewarded well, not realizing, well, who gave us the gifts? And for whose glory and honor are the gifts? And who gets to determine how the gifts are used or aren't used? And so I think that even under our, and again, a biblical concept of stewarding our gifts, stewarding our lives, stewarding our opportunities, we have to be careful that we don't read into that phrase, so I ought to be used this way. I ought to be used this way because, as someone said to me, you know, John, the only thing you deserve is hell. And so you have to really kind of own that. That I don't deserve for God to use my gifts any particular way. That's his business. I think that it is. So back to your question, I'm kind of going on here.
Please keep going. This is like also good.
Yeah, I think back to your question is we just come to God and say, you know, God, how do you want to use me today? I mean, I've got these gifts. This is my job. This is my family situation, my role in my church or community. These are the things that, you know, seem like I should be going after, but it just seems like those aren't coming together. So God, I just yield to you again. And if you're just wanting me to push through this and to somehow get better position to be able to be in this place using this gifts to accomplish this thing, then help me to know that. Or if this is a season where you're just saying you need to trust me with the gifts and abilities I've given you and trust that in time I will use them as I see best, then, because I think that pride is inevitable, that pride leads us eventually to anxiety, and humility eventually leads us to peace. And so what we do with when we feel like we're being overlooked or underutilized, if it just leads to ongoing anxiety, that probably is an indicator that somehow my pride's kicking in here. If it leads to peace, and by peace I don't mean passivity, I mean real peace,
like rest.
Then probably this means I'm humbly approaching this situation.
Well, and as you were talking, I mean, seriously, everything you're saying is like exactly what I need, like constant reminders of. But like as you were talking about the thing of basically you're saying we get worried that God is going to rip us off, which goes straight back to like Genesis 3. And like it's just so interesting because Eve ate the fruit thinking, like, worried God was going to rip her off, when really, like, exactly where God had her was, like, the best it could ever be, you know?
And she couldn't see it.
And I can't see it so often either, you know? So, but, yeah, I mean, what you said about anxiousness being an indicator of pride and peace or rest being an indicator of like
humility
or trusting God or whatever. That's really good. That'll help me, I think, the next time I start to feel anxious, to kind of be able to assess that. So and do you have did you have any other thoughts on that, or can I move on to something else?
No, let's move on to my very embarrassing Christmas roast story.
Adam, are you listening?
Oh, this is one of those things that I'm just like, but anyhow, so at the Hawkins home, every Christmas when we all get together, all the kids and grandkids, usually one of our traditions is we roast like a huge prime rib roast for one of the dinners. And, you know, that is for our budget, that's a pretty expensive piece of meat. You know, it's maybe like $100 piece of meat that we're roasting. So my son-in-law, who is also a dear friend to me, Adam, this is Laura's husband, he has, over these recent years, just become like a master griller.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He can just grill. I mean, he has turned it into an art and a science and who knows what else. And I'm just like one of those, throw the charcoal on, you know, light it, throw the meat on and hope for the best. And so one time they're here for Christmas and I'm out there grilling this like $100 piece of meat. And I go out there and the grill is so hot, it feels like it's about to explode. Like if I don't do something, something's going to explode. And the meat is just like getting charred, like on the outside. And I am completely freaked out. Like what? And so as soon as I see it, I realize that Adam is just like inside the kitchen door and over a little bit. And he would know exactly what to do in this situation. I mean, exactly what to do. And as soon as I thought that, I thought, but I can't do that, you know, because then he'll know that I'm an idiot at grilling. And,
no,
you know, kind of men turn grilling almost into right. a test of masculinity in some ways. And it's basically like, my son-in-law is going to know I'm not a real man because I'm burning up this dad-burned roast. And so I sit there and I'm just, you know, I'm just, and then immediately I realize, John, you're an idiot. Go in there and get Adam right now. And so I go in and get Adam. He comes out very calmly, very non-judgmentally, says, you know, why don't we adjust this and this, and I think we'll be fine. And we did it and we were fine and the roast was great. Now, that sounds almost like a silly story, but I think it really just gets at the core of what it is. You know, when I'm at work and I realize I don't know something or I don't mm-hmm. know how to do something, mm-hmm. but I am petrified at admitting that to my boss or to a fellow employee who really is good at it. Mm-hmm. Or in a marriage where, you know, as a husband, say like financial management. Mm-hmm. In mine and Janet's marriage, I am a total disaster with financial management. And Janet is really good at it. Mm-hmm. But learning to humble myself to say, you know, Janet, how do you think is the best way for us to manage this? Because I'm just not good at this.
Yeah.
I think it's those little things during the day that in a sense are the tip of the iceberg. And again, as leaders in our spheres of influence, mm-hmm. when we see ourselves balking at humbling ourselves, mm-hmm. at getting help, at admitting need, both to God and to others, it's not just a one-off thing.
Huh,
it's a, it's,
so
it's the tip of the iceberg that's
yeah.
showing us I've got problems. You know, C.S. Lewis in Mere Christianity, he says in there, if someone wants to grow against pridefulness in their life, the first thing they have to admit is how conceited they are.
Hmm.
You know, basically
yeah.
how prideful they are. And until we can come to see, this isn't just a roast on Christmas week. This is something that is penetrating my whole heart.
Totally.
Then we don't have a place to begin. Yeah.
Man, that's so good, Dad. Well, and I mean, it, from some of the verses earlier, like, this is an ongoing issue for all of us, you know? Mm-hmm. So we all are dealing with this, and I could totally relate. I mean, it plays out differently for me, but, you know, I have my own versions of, you know, being afraid to ask for help with grilling. So what are some steps that we can take to turn from our pride when we see it? You know, like once we admit we really have a problem, and I love the way you said it, it's, what we're seeing is the tip of an iceberg. It goes way deeper. So then what?
Yeah. Well, we have to, you know, start with Jesus, and in some ways with the Trinity. But, you know, with Jesus, we see the man who humbled himself.
Mm-hmm.
We see the man who could have exalted himself in a wrong way, any way he wanted to.
Hmm.
But he humbled himself. He didn't grab for the position. You know, as it says in Philippians 2, he let go and took on the form of man.
Yeah.
So we have to look at Jesus both to just be compelled by his humility, but also to realize I can't follow him and remain in my pride. That just, it can't happen. It does not make sense for me to say I'm a follower of Christ and remain in my pridefulness. And I think also with the Trinity, you know, you see in the Trinity this harmony of each of them pointing to the other.
Yeah.
You know, of the Father exalting the Son. You know, of the Son exalting the Father, of the Spirit exalting both of them. Like they're constantly giving glory and honor to each other. And so I think that both the Trinity and Jesus particularly helps me to see what the goal is of humility, but also helps me to see there's no need to say I'm a follower of Jesus if I have any notion that I can remain in my pridefulness and follow him.
Yeah.
I can't do it. So I think there's a beginning point. I think that beginning to understand pride, and I got this from a book I read one time called Humility, The Beauty of Holiness by Andrew Murray. And that book, Murray says that a lot of times we think that humility is either just endlessly picking ourselves apart or endlessly talking about all of our sins. And Murray says that no, what humility is complete dependence upon God for everything. And so I think one of the ways that we push against pride is begin to look at all of the areas in which I'm not depending upon God.
Man, that's so good.
In which my confidence is in myself alone. I think that, and asking God's Spirit to illuminate that to us, to help us to see it. And then as we do see it, choosing what would be the humble act. I think those are some ways to start on this and to realize this is a lifelong process.
Yeah, no, all of that is so, so good. So, but with what you said about it being a lifelong process, okay, so I guess maybe before that, let me say, I think my big takeaway, like a couple of things that you just said that are good takeaways for me. One is just that when I see my pride, recognizing that that's the tip of the iceberg, that it's not like an isolated incident where I like just had this blip on the radar, but it's indicative of something that goes deeper. That's really helpful. I love what you said about relying on God and like that self deprecation or self, you know, just like constantly talking about all of our weaknesses is still self-focused, and what we need to do instead of that or pride is to look to God and rely on him. That's really good. And then what you just said about recognizing that this is a lifelong process, I want to ask you, this is my last question, like, does it ever get easier? I'm just kind of curious to know, like, what to expect, because I have truly, this is like embarrassing, but I feel like I've only recently begun to see that I am a proud person. And I know it's the first step just to see it, so that's, I guess, encouraging. But now I can see my pride and self-seeking motive, like, everywhere. And it's honestly, like, kind of discouraging sometimes to just see it's, like, how often I am proud. So it's, like, for you, is it less of a battle than it was 30 years ago? Like, do you kind of develop habits and like your mind changes over time as you humble yourself before God, or what is it like for you?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that for me, and I don't say that my experience is normative for every Christian. I think for me, I know that in some ways I am a more humble man than I was, you know, 49 years ago when mm-hmm. I came to know him. And yet, every day, I still see so many motivations in my heart mm-hmm. that are, you know, like you were saying, self-promoting, but especially that are depending upon me rather than depending upon God.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it gets easier because, as I said at the beginning, as a leader, you get aware of your context. You get aware, part of my orientation is to be independent from God, to not mm-hmm. depend upon Him.
Yeah.
And so you that begins to be in your awareness.
Yeah.
And then I think also it gets easier in that, you know, when it seems like it's the 500,000th time you've had to go to the Lord and admit your pride and mm-hmm. ask for His forgiveness.
Yeah.
Then you realize you don't resist it quite as much.
Huh.
Because you realize I can delay this and stay in my foolishness. But every mm-hmm. time I've done that over the last almost 50 years, it's not gone well for me, and it's yeah. not honored Him.
Yeah.
And so then you begin to see, I need to go quicker to Jesus.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, what a great place to end.
Wow.
Yeah. Thanks, Dad. Seriously, this is one that I'm going to listen to again because, this is just all so good and so helpful. So anyway, listeners, thanks for joining us. And in 2 weeks, we'll be back with another episode kind of following up on this on humility. So thanks for joining us. And Dad, thanks so much for sharing.
Oh, thank you, Laura.
Listeners, if you would like to find out more about John's thoughts on life, leadership, and mentoring, please go to the Leadership Edge website at www.lead-edge.com. Or if you have questions or ideas of topics for future podcasts, please reach out to us at lai@lead-edge.com. We look forward to hearing from you.